You're listening to the Libertarian Party of Indiana podcast, where we talk to the individuals that help move our party forward. I'm your host, Executive Director Chris Spengel. You can hear all of our podcasts at podcast.lpin.org, or you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Financial support for this podcast comes from the 1994 Society. The 1994 Society is made up of grassroots libertarians like yourself that donate monthly to the Libertarian Party of Indiana. To join, please go to lpin.org/join. We thank you for your continued support. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Chris Spengel, the Executive Director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, and joining me this week is Abdul Hakim Shabazz. Abdul, how are you doing?
Doing fine. Never thought you'd be interviewing me.
I know. It's kind of weird. I feel weird about this. Where have you been? You're not on WXNT anymore. What are you doing these days?
Oh, still doing the shameless media self-promotion. I just have just a number of different outlets to do it. I am the editor and publisher of IndyPolitics.org. It's my political blog website. We'll write about, news stories and things going on here in Indianapolis and across the state of Indiana. Usually it's stories that won't break for maybe 1 or 2 days in the mainstream press. And so we like to sort of pride ourselves on sort of being above and spotting issues that eventually my brothers and sisters in the media will get to. It's open source, so you don't need a subscription or anything or passwords. You can go read it because we have advertisers and some other things that keep the lights on and the martinis flowing.
Sure.
We do offer up a little thing called the Cheat Sheet. It is a sort of subscriber-based newsletter, $25 for 6 months. You get gossip, rumor, innuendo.
As the Democrats call it, fabrications.
Yeah, fabrications that later turn out to be true.
Right.
I tell people, we don't manufacture news, we just assemble it.
Right. So, and if you're a libertarian that doesn't follow, especially if you're in the northern or southern part of the state and you don't have access to your local news, which really we'll talk about another state's news, Abdul's website is a great way to get state politics. There is some Indianapolis politics, but sometimes that can have an effect on state politics. So check out IndyPolitics.org.
Yeah, and the other thing we try to do is, like what we're doing right now, is we podcast. So we record interviews, we embed them so you can actually hear from the newsmakers themselves. As we record this, I just left the State House a few moments ago because they announced that Senator Connie Lawson of Danville is going to be the new Secretary of State. So
how do you think that will affect the Libertarian Party of Indiana?
Secretary of State is more of an administrative position, so I don't think it'll have too much of an impact. Connie does have a lot of experience in local government, and in election law, so she brings that area of expertise. If I were a libertarian, what I would make it a point to do is maybe reach out to her and say, hey, even though we're a different political party, we're also constituents. Here are some of our concerns. For example, we have 6 million people on the voter rolls here in Indiana, and Indiana's population is 6.2 million people. Maybe we could look at maybe cleaning up some of those voter rolls. I asked Senator Lawson, well, now Secretary of State Lawson today, with Senator Dick Lugar, we're starting to have some of these residency type issues pop up. Is it time to clarify, maybe a little bit more in Indiana, what is residency versus what is not residency?
Sure.
So we don't have these, the Indiana Election Division says one thing, but the Marion County Election Board says something else, but a court says something else, but the Supreme Court says something else. So, maybe it's time to maybe, clean things up, maybe tighten up the ship a little bit. And I think that's where libertarians, can probably have, a bigger role. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily start tinkering around with, accessibility and ballot access, because that's probably a fight you won't be able to win because of the vested two-party system. But I think everybody can agree on, cleaning up the voter rolls and, better defining residency, because that impacts all candidates regardless of political
party.
But
don't you see that moving ballot access from just the Secretary of State's race to any statewide election, don't you think there, because of Charlie White, there's an argument to be made for that?
I would say, yeah, you could probably make the argument and maybe make it a little bit better now than before, because what happens if you have, another Charlie White type situation, or was a Charlie White situation such a fluke, in more than 150 years, almost 200 years of state history, that, do we really need to worry about that ever happening
again? And what we argue is that even though we're not fans of Republicans and Democrats, they shouldn't be disenfranchised and lose ballot access because of one person. They work hard. Hundreds of thousands of people work hard to put these organizations on the ballot, and one person can ruin that, and you have to go back and fix it retroactively or in the courts, and that takes time and money. and the Libertarian Party got 6% and we're growing. So really, it's a moot point. Just make it easy and fair for everybody and make it statewide.
Yeah, and I think that's the argument that you make, which is we're not doing this for us. We're doing it for all of us.
Right.
Because you never know when is it going to happen to one of your...
Because it's not fair for Republicans to lose ballot access for 4 years because of Charlie White. And so what are some of the other issues in this? We just finished the legislative session, this General Assembly. What were some of the big themes in this last legislative session?
Well, the line I used in the column that I wrote for the Annapolis Star was, I took, you know, Charles Dickens' The Tales of Two Cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was an age of wisdom. It was an age of foolishness. And if you look at the last session of the General Assembly, you know, they did some pretty substantive things like right to work, like full funding of full day kindergarten. I know that may annoy some libertarians, but
some libertarians would consider that government paid babysitting.
Not if you've been to kindergarten lately. It is far from government. It's far from babysitting.
It's been a while for me.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, if you look at, for example, they did a lot of things in school where there was full day kindergarten, multiple count days now for school districts. So if a student transfers to a different school district within the school year, school districts don't get to keep money unnecessarily, nor do they lose money unnecessarily. And also they did at the college level, they did credit creep, which means now at IU and Purdue and other state universities, you know, it's 120 hours to graduate in your program. Otherwise, you better have a pretty good reason as to why you have the program that you do. They phased out the inheritance tax, giving back a taxpayer refund in this day and age. You know, name any state that's actually giving back money.
Sure, absolutely.
So I think, you know, for all those things, you know, sort of that best of times, age of wisdom for the legislature, we had debates on Girl Scout cookies and gay license plates and, you know, should creationism be taught in schools? No, to me, that's, you know, a bunch of foolishness and silly stuff that really became a distraction.
You made the point, I think, on indiepolitics.org that maybe they've stayed too long, that maybe we need to shorten the session by about 2-3 weeks. Was this the long or short session, by the way?
This was a short session.
Right. So like it was about 2 weeks too long.
Yeah, the thing was that they managed to get everything done when they did. You know, right to work and then just kind of, you know, deal with smoking bans and tidy up a few other things. But the problem was you had all this extra time. And,
right,
you know, nature, like my brother's ex-wife, hates a vacuum. So something's got to fill up that time. And what happens? You know, things that normally wouldn't, you know, perhaps see the light of day, unfortunately do, because reporters, we need something to write about.
Right.
So when somebody calls the Girl Scouts of America pro-abortion, pro-lesbian gender, or wants to teach creationism in school, guess what? We all start gravitating toward...
But unfortunately, that is sort of... I mean, that's kind of a widely held view within the Republican Party in many ways. I mean, do you think that the Republican Party really needs to get control of some of these almost conspiracy theories within their own party?
What I will argue, it's a column I'm getting ready to write in the future, that it's time for Republicans to have a come to Jesus meeting. Is that I can appreciate, you know, the social conservative point of view that, you know, what strong families make for better communities, which make for better states, which make for better countries. I understand that, and I believe the best way for a child to be raised is a responsible two-parent household. However, I don't know if necessarily I need the government dictating to me exactly what my family should look like. You know, that's kind of our That's kind of our job. So if you're really Republican, you go back to the, you know, smaller government, limited government. It's not just in your pocketbook, it's also in your underwear.
It's individualism.
Yeah. You keep your hands out of it as opposed to trying to enact a social agenda. And the problem is, and I had this conversation with the minister yesterday, the problem with Republicans is when you run around and preach family values and morality and you don't live it, you know, you just set yourself up for even more failure and more discreditation of your own cause.
And actually, you start to have people trust you less and less and less. And I think when, you know, the libertarians always used to be called loons, and now we look at the Republican Party and we're like, they're running for president. You know, I mean, we're the moderate middle in some ways.
And actually what you're finding is, you know, the Republicans that aren't that social conservative will deep down inside admit that they're probably a libertarian. You just can't get elected as a libertarian, so they ran as a Republican.
Right. What about the smoking ban? That was a big issue. What ended up happening with the statewide smoking ban?
Well, it started out as a, you know, total ban in most public places. Then along came the exemptions, which were casinos, my personal favorite, full disclosure, cigar bars.
Sure, that's where you have your first and second job. That's where you do most of your work.
Most of my work.
Right.
I was working on something yesterday, having a Cuban cigar and Jack and Diet. Then they carved out, you know, hookah bars, racinos, but the big fight this year was over bars and taverns, because fundamentally that's what it centers around. You know, should smoking be allowed, you know, in a bar or a tavern? You know, and libertarian philosophy usually is, you know, let the free market, let the bar owners.
If a bar owner takes all the risk, they put all the money into the bar, let them make the decision, because the public doesn't take any of the risk. The bar owner does.
Yeah. But the opposite of that being, though, that, you know, should be people be exposed to, you know, the government regulates, you know, public health all the time. You know, you can't have dirty dishes and serve in dirty glasses. You know, you can't serve people expired food. So if we can regulate that aspect of it, why not be able to regulate the air aspect of your bar?
But the counter argument to that is you have a reasonable expectation that a dish will be clean.
Right.
You know that smoke is bad, and you're choosing to be in that environment, and a lot of employees who work in bars smoke.
Yeah, and see, what I will argue is you have the job of government is to protect you from dangers that you can't necessarily protect yourself from. I can't see how they're handling the food in the kitchen. So I won't know if the meat was fully cooked and fully prepared until after I've eaten it, and by then it's too late and I'm sick. The smoke, I can pretty much tell walking in the room, okay, this place is a little bit too smoky for me. I'm going somewhere else.
Sure. So what ended up happening?
They compromised, and bars and taverns are excluded, but restaurants aren't. And the philosophical argument is that a restaurant is a little bit of a different creature, you know, than a bar.
It's about the children.
Yeah, children, and people shouldn't have to be exposed to smoke while they eat. And most people don't necessarily smoke while they eat anyway, because you can't.
Yeah, that's kind of hard.
Yeah, taste your food.
Yeah, talented if you can do that.
Yeah, and I would argue that smoking is a little bit less crucial to a restaurant's business model than maybe it is for a bar or a tavern. So while I philosophically aren't crazy about smoking bans, I can see the logic and rationale and banning smoking in a restaurant versus a bar or tavern. So that's where we are right now. Now, the anti-smoking people say they're going to come back again. I don't know if they're going to do it next year, because this issue is the only way you got this passed was that bars and taverns were excluded to begin with.
Sure. Let's talk about the United States Senate race. You've got Dick Lugar versus Richard Murdoch, and then on the Libertarian ticket, you've got Andy Horning, and on the Democratic side, you have Joe Donnelly. How do you see that race eventually shaking out, and what advice would you give to Andy Horning?
Like I said, the big fight right now is, you know, it's on the Republican side. It's Richard Murdoch and Dick Lugar, and a lot of people are worried that the race is going to get even uglier than necessary. The Howard County Republican chairman sent out a news release this morning as we record this, you know, encouraging both sides, you know, to stay positive, keep a clean campaign. As folks who are listening to this podcast more than likely know, Senator Lugar has been, we've had this sort of residency controversy with the Tea Party people and, you know, supported by the Murdoch folks and Freedom Works, trying to get Dick Lugar off the ballot by filing challenges saying, you know, he's not a Hoosier, you know, he doesn't live here.
Was that a wise campaign strategy? I mean, it seems to me that they're spending an awful lot of resources on something that's probably a fruitless campaign, and why not spend that money trying to raise his name ID?
And actually, well, Murdoch has about 75% name ID right now.
Okay.
But he's also got a lot of negatives that are attached, attached with it, in part because of, you know, the Dick Lugar's not a Hoosier thing that people have, you know, rightly or wrongly associated Richard Murdoch's campaign with. And one of the things I found is that, you know, people in Indiana will put up with a lot of stuff, but that's one of the things they really don't tolerate, is sort of questioning somebody's sort of Hoosierness, so to speak, who's, you know, who's lived here, you know, was mayor here, grew up here, you know, went to school here. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, now the question is with Senator Lugar and what happened with the Marion County Election Board, they ruled 2-1 that although he is a resident and although he's never committed voter fraud, he can't vote using his old home address on the, you know, southwest side of, you know, Marion County. Though the problem with that is it was 2 Democrats to 1 Republican. So the whole thing looks partisan, and then you have, you know, the conspiracy theories that Joe Donnelly and, you know, the Tea Party Republicans are all sort of working together to, you know, soften up Dick Lugar. And, you know, did Joe Donnelly privately admit that he can't beat Richard Lugar, but he can beat Richard Murdoch? And so this is what all this is.
Sure.
You know it's also sort of vast, far-right, far-left-wing conspiracy.
Sure. So how does Andy Horning, who had one of the first Tea Parties in Indiana on July 4th, 2007, somebody who's annotated the Constitution, how does he sort of translate that into some votes and to some attention for the libertarian philosophy.
Well, if I were Eddie Horning, I would go for the, for lack of a better term, sort of the non-crazy Tea Party people. That if you truly believe in what the Tea Party originally stood for, then I am the candidate for you. And because they, you don't necessarily need to go on television or radio to do it. You know, you use social media, you use a Twitter, use a Facebook, you use a blogosphere and do all that stuff and sort of create, you know, that sort of underground network and appeal to those folks.
Right.
Because the Tea Party people, I would actually argue, are split between the crazy Tea Party people and the non-crazy
right.
Tea Party people.
Yeah. So let's talk about the governor's race now. We obviously have a higher profile candidate than we probably have had in a long time, considering that he's most likely to get our nomination at our state convention. What advice would you give to Rupert?
I would argue that if I'm a candidate like Rupert, I have to get beyond the beard, get beyond the celebrity. And what you have to do is really start articulating clear policies as to what do you want to do with the state of Indiana? What direction?
Right.
You know, do you want to take it in? You know, what is your plan, you know, to, you know, increase, you know, government doesn't make jobs, but government can create an atmosphere where jobs grow and prosper. So what's your plan, you know, for job creation? You know, what is your plan? You know, and education kind of goes along with that because we need an educated workforce to attract the jobs that are necessary to get here. So what are you going to do? I mean,
right.
What do you do about transportation and infrastructure? Because guess what? We're about the major moves money back in 2005 is about to run out soon. So what is your plan? What is your strategy, you know, to take care of roads and infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
And the ironic thing for a libertarian candidate, I think, is how does a libertarian philosophy work with the day-to-day functionings of government when the libertarian philosophy is sort of seems sort of counterintuitive to government doing all this
sure.
stuff.
Right. I Abdul is my former boss. I worked at WXNT with him, and he's one of the people who I went in a Republican and I came out a libertarian because he challenged my my Republican beliefs. And he
actually I was just being a jerk.
Yeah, that too. But he also challenged my libertarian beliefs because you've got to translate philosophy into a working system. When I would help Ed Coleman when he was on the Indianapolis City County Council. I mean, politics is about compromise. Politics is where rubber meets the road. I mean, politics is easy because you can say whatever you want. Governing is hard because you have to make an impact.
Yeah, and that's going to be the big challenge, I think, for Rupert, which is, you know, can you take your name ID and your fame and celebrity and translate that into, you know, credible public policy? You know, you've done a lot of work with kids. Okay, great. What's your plan for DCS and Child Protective Services? You know, how do we, you know, we've done a good job of decreasing, you know, the number of child deaths in the state, cutting them in half over the past 8 years, but still the old philosophy I'm saying is, you know, one child is too many. So how do we do better intake? You know, how do we do better reporting? And then, you know, how does that libertarian philosophy, you know, sort of, you know, conjive with, you know, DCS's mission, which is, you know, to make sure kids are safe, but that may mean taking them out of a home. And, you know, parental rights. You know,
sure.
How do you reconcile? And,
right.
and if you're Rupert, that's what I think you spend. You know, because unless somebody else pops up, you're going to get your libertarian nomination.
Right.
So, you know, spend this time, you know, drafting policy, you know, putting together sort of that libertarian think tank of really smart, you know, like-minded libertarian people, and come up with a policy. Because I can tell you, that's what the Pence people are doing. That's what the Gregg people are
right.
doing.
Absolutely. And I know from just being across the street and dropping in, they are working on some of that stuff. And they have on their website put out several things. And I've traveled around to county conventions with him as he's tried to get delegates for our nomination. He has articulated some of that. So now it's just about moving beyond the Libertarian Party and putting it out to the public at large.
Right. And I think, you know, that philosophy of, you know, less government, you know, leaving you alone, you know, it does resonate because people, government is not very popular.
Indiana does have a libertarian streak in it.
Yeah.
So, you will be at our convention on March 24th in the morning and to moderate our presidential debate. Are you looking forward to moderating the presidential debate for our libertarian candidates here in Indiana?
Hey, guys got to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to.
They libertarians, tomorrow the RNC. I'm no John King or Wolf Blitzer, but then again, I'm also much better looking and much more entertaining.
Well, you're probably more talented than they are. And you will be moderating our presidential debate on March 24th in the morning, and those who buy a full convention package can attend that. And we're not going to put it online because it is for our the people who buy the full package. what are some of the issues that the Libertarian Party can talk about in the presidential race? Obviously, we're going to be outfunded billions to a million, maybe. So what are some of the things that we could talk about in the presidential race that might help give us a leg up and reach out to the public?
Well, like I said, one of the things is you got to move beyond, you know, sort of your brand, so to speak, which is, okay, you're libertarians. What do you want to do? Like, they all want to, you know, become isolationists and smoke pot. Like, no, that is not the Libertarian Party. We're much more than that. And so one of the things I'll be looking at, and when we sit down and talk to the four candidates, you know, who are on the panel, is, okay, give me specifics. You know, give me details. You know, it's one thing for us to be sitting in a room one day, you know, having a couple beers and talk about how the world should work. Well, that's one thing, but here's how the world actually does work. And what do you do? And how does your libertarian philosophy, you know, jive into that? Because here's a newsflash. None of you guys may like Social Security, but you're not going to become president and get rid of it tomorrow.
Sure.
That is not going to happen. So let's have a practical, logical, rational discussion. You know, what does a libertarian president do, you know, a place like Syria or a place like Uganda? Do you just let it, you know, collapse into nothing, or do you intervene, or are you somewhere in between? Because guess what? You're still the world's main superpower, so you got responsibilities. You may not like being the world's policeman, but maybe you need to be the world's police dispatcher, you know.
Right.
So
Yeah, and I think that's tough. There is a strong internal debate within the Libertarian Party. Are we directional, or are we destination libertarians? The fact that destination libertarians want us to come in tomorrow and say this is how the world's going to be when I'm elected, we're going to make it this way. I think Barack Obama had a touch of that, and we've sort of seen how well that's worked out for him. Or are you going to be destination libertarians, or directional libertarians, I should say, and move towards the ultimate goal, and maybe we'll have a libertarian society in 100 years.
Or 50.
Right. So hopefully sooner than that. So,
like I said, you know, and part of it comes from articulating a clear, logical message. I mean, okay, you don't like the tax code, fine. What do you replace it with?
Right.
And how do you replace it? You know, it's, you know, I always say the devil's in the details. And I think the American people right now, you know, they're not crazy about the president, but they're also not crazy about the Republicans. So, you know, people say, I wish I had a third party, as the two major parties become more and more polarized. So here's an opportunity for libertarians to sort of capture, you know, that middle ground.
Well, and I was surprised on another podcast that we do, We Are Libertarians. We talked about the ACLU. They ranked candidates on certain issues of liberty, religious liberty, civil liberties, and Gary Johnson was included in that chart. So I thought it was very promising that a third-party candidate was included in the ACLU's ratings.
Yeah, and I think Americans are looking for a third-party candidate, and if you do it right, no, you may not win this time around, but remember, Democrats and Republicans also at one point in time were third party.
One final question. How do you think how do you see the Ron Paul movement and the Tea Party movement, those two sort of, you know, they're separate movements, they sort of intertwine, they're sort of outside of the mainstream. How do you think they affect the race, all the races, in the coming election?
Well, I think the Ron Paul people have an impact in the sense that if you look at the Republican primary, the question is going to be, is will Mitt Romney have the delegates he needs to become president?
Right.
Because the goal now isn't so much that he won't get the most delegates. The goal for the Pat Buchanan, Rick Santorum people is to deny him a majority of the delegates and the number that he needs to end up having a brokered convention.
Sure.
So I think somebody like a Ron Paul, you know, the small number of delegates that he picks up can be crucial down the road if that's a scenario that that plays out. As far as the Tea Party folks go, like I said, I think there's sort of two Tea Parties, which is, you know, there's
the Orley Tates Tea Party and then the Tea Party that's more corporate.
Yeah, exactly. And so, once again, it's which way do people want to go? I think the Ron Paul people can have the bigger impact in the sense that they could decide make or break delegates. And then, yeah, the conspiracy theories running around that the Ron Paul people are really in bed with Mitt Romney people to make Rand Paul a vice presidential candidate. Like I said, once again, I don't believe in conspiracy theories because, you know, some days a cigar really is Justice
and I always maintain that the government is either totally stupid and inept, and these people are totally stupid and inept, or they're all evil and corrupt and evil geniuses. I mean, they can't be both.
Yeah, and I told somebody the other day, if this is really a political conspiracy, how do you know about it?
Right.
The very nature that it's conspiracy means you shouldn't know about it.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for being on the podcast. You can come and see Abdul moderate our candidate forum on Saturday morning of our state convention. You can find out all the details at lpin.org. We look forward to having you moderate the debate.
Hey, looking forward to being there. I'd be more than happy to cross-post this podcast on indypolitics.org.
Great. And please, go to iTunes, download his podcast, and get some good information. So thank you again.
Thank you for listening to the Libertarian Party of Indiana podcast. For more information, please visit us at lpin.org. Our music has been provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. To hear more of his music, please visit briankeithwallen.com or find him on Facebook. Thank you for listening. When you got November on your mind.